Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today as we take a look at your computer and your software with our guest, Jesse LeGrew, technical team lead with UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology, or DOIT as we call it. He focuses on desktop and laptop security projects, has some ideas for computer-related gifts, and, of course, answer your computer questions. So I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Jesse LeGrew, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
What should you keep in mind when selecting a tech gift for somebody?
I think the biggest thing is usually ease. So what's going to be something that you can unpack, use right away, and not have to worry about a lot of different videos, putting something together? So hopefully being able to enjoy that gift right away, but also kind of knowing your audience. So I bought a house a few years ago, and now, home automation. There are new gadgets coming up every year to allow home automation for your locks, for your lights, your garage, thermostat, and just lots of cool gadgets if you own a house, but it's going to be completely different than if you want something for, you know, your pet. So, yeah, I'm big into home automation now, but really the ease is the biggest thing. And I always look at customer ratings and reviews. Find out what other people like, what other people don't like, because we often don't have enough time, or we just don't own the product to know, hey, is this going to work? Is this easy to use?
Are there some things that caught your eye this year in terms of kind of new gadgets or whatever?
Well, one of the things I was looking at for home automation, but even people who like to have wireless speakers, things they can take around with them, they had the Echo previously, which was a taller unit which had a good speaker system. It pairs with a variety of different services, and you can use a lot of home automation with it, but it was a little bit more expensive. Right now they have what's called the Echo Dot, a new version of the Echo Dot. Smaller device, it's less expensive, and it's meant so you can actually put them throughout your house, throughout your apartment, so you can kind of use it wherever you're going, so you don't have to necessarily carry anything around. But it was kind of a cool little gift that I saw that was also really, really less expensive than the full version Echo. So that was a nice one.
And even a coffee maker out there.
Yeah, there is a Mr. Coffee wireless coffee maker. Apparently, it will notify you when your coffee is ready. I didn't look too much on any of the other specifics, but if you do have everything prepped, you know, easy push of a button. I don't think this coffee maker actually did have anything where you can do full automation, where you actually have water taps and everything else. But that would be the next generation. You're waking up, hit the button on your phone, and start making your coffee.
And when you go online, just to kind of look around for things, where's a good place to go for that? Or are there just several?
There are several, and usually what I'll do is I'll kind of Google something, and I look at every site, because every site kind of looks at different gifts, and there is some overlap. So, for example, new Apple hardware is generally intersects on a lot of these lists, but some of them are completely different. So I looked at three of them this morning. One had the Echo, two of them didn't. So I generally kind of look around, but if you just browse around a store, you're going to see a lot of stuff out there that, you know, is going to tantalize you and probably people that you know.
And hopefully make some gift receivers happy.
Oh, definitely.
Well, we have callers on the line. You can join in, by the way, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Let's turn to Dennis in Appleton first. Dennis, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. We have a problem with an Acer laptop that's been recurring where you power it up and the display does not light. You have to shut it down and keep trying it. Is there a cost-effective fix for this? It's about 6 years old.
6-year-old Acer.
And it kind of depends on the actual issue with the laptop. Do you by any chance have any kind of external monitor that you might be able to plug into your laptop just to test to see if that external display works?
I could get one from my brother.
I would, one thing I would test is just to see to make sure that the computer itself functions and that you at least get a display from an external monitor. It would kind of narrow down where the issue might be. If it is the display itself, it could be a cost-effective fix, but it's hard to know until a technician actually tears it apart to really do an analysis. Some of the parts might only be about $30 to $50, not including any labor. But if you do need a new LCD panel itself, the price is a lot more expensive. So it's really difficult to know until you actually take it apart and if you have spare parts to test with. I'd recommend actually talking to a computer repair store, but actually plugging in an external monitor to see if it functions is a good first step, but it also means that you might be able to use the laptop as a computer, even if the display still doesn't work that's built into the laptop itself.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks a lot for calling, Dennis. Appreciate it. George in Partyville, your turn. Hi, George.
Hi. See, I've heard about these high-tech light bulbs that actually have speakers in them. So you can, like, if you got a TV in your shop and a lot of lights, you can replace your light bulbs with these bulbs, and then they'll have the speakers in them as well. Is that something that is...
does it work?
Does it work?
So I haven't actually had any personal experience with those myself. However, I just took a look at a few, and some of them actually do have good reviews. So right now I'm kind of counting on the reviews that I'm seeing online. But I'd actually recommend going to, in this case, you're going to see them at a lot of hardware stores. So whether it's like Lowe's, Home Depot, and actually
Ace
take
or
a
whatever.
Look.
Yeah.
Right. Take a look at one of them, try it out, and see what it sounds like. Yeah, once again, I don't have any firsthand experience, but some of them actually do have pretty good ratings. I have seen these also where you can get speakers for your shower, ones that are actually built into the shower head, where you can pair your phone, listen to a podcast or music while you're in the shower. And they worked pretty well. In this case, it probably depends on the light bulb, but I just recommend going to any kind of hardware store, anywhere that sells light bulbs, just to try it out. But it does seem that people do like some of these. They do work pretty well, at least for the people who would purchase them.
Yeah, so I was kind of wondering, I mean, so they would actually give the right amount of light if you wanted a 100-watt light bulb, that kind of thing, and it would still give that kind of light and the sound at the same time then.
Correct. You would actually get the best of both worlds. You'd get some light. Some of these are even smarter where you actually get not just your normal, like, let's say, soft 100 or 200. You'd also get multiple colors. So you can kind of get a huge range of not only do I have sound, but I can make this a party room with my smartphone to give me all these different vibrant colors as well. So there's a huge range with a huge range of price. But I'm sure that one of them out there probably functions for what you would want.
Yeah, sounds like fun, George.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. All right, Ben in Minocqua, your turn. Hi, Ben.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
Question to your guy there. I see all kinds of advertisements, people drawing on tablets, and it makes photo editing and video editing look so fun with the stylus pen. I'm just wondering, is that all cracked up, you know, what it's cracked up to be, or should I stick with a PC? Right now I have a really large home PC fully ramped up for video, but I'm looking for something more mobile, and what are your suggestions?
And I think, so obviously a laptop or a very powerful tablet would probably be something you'd want to have that's mobile. Whether it's a touchscreen or not, most of the laptops you can get these days actually do have a touchscreen capability built in. Are you using, right now you're using a PC, is that correct?
Yeah, I just had a Dell built with a video card put in. It streams, it's pretty fast, but obviously it's a tank and it sits at home all the time.
Yeah,
and one thing I'd recommend at least taking a look at, and this is kind of where going to a store and playing around with some of these is very beneficial, the Surface Pro tablets that allow you to, you know, it's just a tablet computer, you can get a lot of add-ons for it, and it could be powerful enough for what you need depending on what you have right now, but it does have the touchscreen. It's very small, and it can be very powerful. It can also also power multiple external monitors, depending on exactly what you're doing, and it could be a good fit. There are also other Dell devices out there if you do like Dell. I've used smaller Dell tablets in the past. I've liked them. Mm-hmm. But you can get that range of, I just want something to do casual browsing or email, or even do full video production. So the price difference is going to be, it's going to be pretty large, depending on how powerful you want it to be. But the Surface Pros are great computers that can be full desktop replacements.
And those
are the specs on those that I would look for on the Surface Pro.
Yeah, and for these, for the Surface Pros, they do kind of range as far as the specifications, but I would get as much memory as you can. And as far, they really do have a large range, and the price is pretty big depending on what you want to get to.
What do you think minimum I should go with?
What kind of video editing software do you use right now?
Adobe Elements.
Okay. Do you know the specs for your current laptop, just as a kind of a comparison?
Not offhand. I know it's kind of off the charts. It takes a few minutes to process a close to an hour movie.
Okay. And was this, how old is your laptop right now?
It was built like a laptop.
Or the computer you're using right now?
About 4 months old.
Okay. Most likely to kind of get above and beyond and really be a full replacement, it may be difficult. What I'd look for is something at least that's a Core i7 that could do most of what you're looking for. It may still take a little bit longer to process, but especially if you do have a really beefed up desktop, it's really difficult to find a laptop that's going to fully replace that.
Not looking to replace it. I'm still going to use that. It's still viable. It's great. I just want to have some mobile capabilities.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and Dell has kind of their power line of laptops as well, but those can also be quite heavy to carry around. I'd recommend actually taking a look at the Surface Pros, look at for something that's Core i7, and try to get something that has at least, I would say, 16 gigabytes of RAM. But the video card and everything else used to power this is going to be extremely important. And if you do want something a little bit more mobile that also has a decent chunk of power, I would look at the Dell laptops that actually are built for that kind of work, which I believe are generally the Dell Precision laptops. They also have Dell Precision desktops that are supposed to be more powered for heavier usage. And the Precision laptops are normally the go-to if you're a Dell user for that powerful laptop on the go.
What do they run for price?
They run for price anywhere from, I think, $1,000 to $1,500.
Okay.
And probably if I spec one out, I could probably make one very expensive. But it depends on kind of what you want. I would say $2,000 would be a price that I would normally assume, but it could be much above that depending on the changes you make.
Yep. Okay.
All right. There you go, Ben. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Call now. We'll get you on pretty quickly here. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Jesse LeGru, technical team lead with the UW-Madison's Division of Information Technology. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn talks with two researchers about the negative health consequences of daylight savings time. So that's at 2 today. Right now, taking a look at your computer and its software with our guest, Jesse LeGru of Do It here at the UW-Madison. Great to have him along. And open lines at 800-642-1234. I hope you'll join us. Let's go to Brandon in Kaukauna next. Hi, Brandon. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What can we do for you?
So I have a Lenovo laptop. It's an IBD i51, and the speakers don't produce a loud enough sound. And I was wondering if there's a way I could do that, boost the sound without a third-party app, either with the registry or some other setting.
And so assuming that, because there's usually two different volume controls that you have. One is kind of for the general system sound, and one might be for an application-specific sound. Assuming those are both kind of at their max, there's right. most likely not much else you're going to be able to do without actually adding separate speakers. Even if you were, the other danger you might have is you could potentially blow up the speakers. Just even like high-end speakers, you can give them a little bit too much, and mm-hmm. they can kind of give up and they can get damaged. So if you do want more sound, I would recommend getting separate speakers.
Okay, yeah. I used an app called Sound Booster, and I had a free trial, but that ran out. That seemed to work well, but I'm just at a loss now.
Yeah, and there definitely are limitations on the different laptop speakers that you get built in. There are ways that you can kind of trick it with software, but I would recommend, just to make sure not to damage the hardware, you might really want to consider getting something that's either kind of a wireless paired speaker or something else that can help you without needing to worry about a lot of the cables.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks for calling. Daryl in Osseo, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, I have a unique issue in that I've lost my password for my computer.
Okay.
I have no idea how to. I need to power it off because I have no access to my wireless internet. And so somebody told me that I need to shut the computer off to have the, have it regain access to the wireless. And I can't find my password. Once I shut it off, I won't be able to turn it on again.
Okay. And is this for, are you using a Windows computer?
Yes.
So is the password that you referenced the password to actually log into Windows itself or for your wireless network?
Basically, to access the computer, when you turn it on.
Yeah.
Okay. And so do you have your computer right now turned on and you're actually able to use Windows?
No, I'm not able to get on the Internet at all. I'm able to turn the computer on, but I can't access the Internet.
Okay. And for your wireless connection, do you know what service you're using or what type of wireless router or modem that you have?
Yes, it's a Linksys.
Okay.
Okay. One thing I'd recommend, so if you are able to get into your computer, but you just can't get to the Internet, so for example, when you turn on your computer, you're able to access Word and other applications, you just can't get on the Internet, correct?
Right.
Okay. If you have lost your wireless router password, what I'd recommend is they will have plugs on the back of your wireless router normally, so that you can actually plug your computer directly in to your modem, and you might be able to access the configuration page. And there's some applications that Linksys has. You can, in this case, it's as soon as you plug it in, you'll be able to get the internet at least.
Yeah.
So you can download tools or utilities. Another thing you might want to consider, as long as you know who else might be using your wireless, there is a reset procedure you can use for most of these devices. And there's usually a reset button on the very back of your wireless router or wireless modem that will reset all of the settings, include the password for wireless and the password to access the administration interface. But you'd be able to reset it, reconnect, and you can always reconfigure it at a later date. But if you plug into the back and you are at least able to get the internet, you can pull up some of the Linksys manuals. They will have the default passwords and the procedures to do that. Mm-hmm. But resetting the device from scratch and reconfiguring it, you'll be able to set whatever password you want, and you should be able to get onto the wireless, at least with the default password, once you're able to look it up on their website.
Okay.
All right. Great. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I have someone who lost a husband and has unfortunately didn't have the passwords for his computer, so it creates some. How do you find somebody else's password when it's a partner?
Right, and there are actually a lot of services that assist with that right now.
Okay,
kind of looking at I guess your digital will, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do when that happens. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of companies out there. LastPass is one that just pops off the top of my head, where you can do password management, but you have capabilities for what to do in the future. Other people do it kind of a less digital method by simply having it in a safe deposit box, printed out or otherwise digitally securely stored. But LastPass, there's other companies out there. So if something happens, then at least you can get access.
So LastPass is
a... LastPass. It's a password management application. And I've been recently seeing some advertisements out there from them specifically around that. So what do you do if you don't have the password? Depending on if it's a computer password to get in, there's always an opportunity or there's a possibility for kind of breaking into the system. Most repair stores will actually be able to do that. They'll have tools so you can reset a macOS password or a Windows password or even Linux, depending on, you know, what you have. So repair stores can also help, but part of it is also, I guess, kind of planning for that eventuality.
Yeah.
And LastPass is one company that can assist with that, but there are others out there as well.
Let's turn to Peter in Lake Geneva next. Hi, Peter.
Hello.
How can we help you?
I have a kind of unusual question. I have about a five-year-old Windows PC, and I was wondering if there is like a device that can be hooked up to the computer and allow it to use the Wi-Fi network rather than getting the cable company to run a separate, you know, line and a separate modem out here.
And that should be possible. I'm guessing right now you have a so you have a Dell desktop, correct?
Actually, it's a Acer desktop, to be specific.
Okay.
The Windows machine.
There are things that you can buy. They're actually very inexpensive. You can probably get one for about $10 to $20, and they have a range. But a lot of stores carry them, like Best Buy, other computer stores out there. You're just going to be looking for a USB wireless adapter. It'll come with the adapter and the software necessary to make it function. But as soon as you have that installed, and it's just something you'd plug in just like a flash drive, a keyboard, or a mouse, you plug it in, install the software, and you can connect to wireless just like you would any other wireless device. It'll look the same as a Windows laptop as well. You use the interface and you connect to your wireless, and then you don't have to worry about any of those cables.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for calling. Dion in Neillsville, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi. I have a problem. We have Exceed Internet, and we have 10 gigabytes a month. My husband and I both have computers. He has a Toshiba. I have an Asus. They're both running iCore 7 processor. They're both running Windows 10. I've got them both set up as metered connections, all the background apps turned off. There's no live tiles. We're both running Avast for virus. And when we boot up, and bear in mind, 10 gigabytes nowadays isn't a whole lot. He gets 5, I get 5. When we boot up, his computer, before he opens a browser up, maybe will use 1.3 megabytes. When I boot up, and when I turn it off at night, I turn the internet connection off. And when I boot up and connect to the internet, and before I open any browser at all, I have a little app that we both have it, and that I can see how much he's using on his and how much I'm using. And when he's used 1.3 megabytes, I've used 50 in about 30 seconds. And I don't have a browser open. What do you think might be using that?
There could be quite a few things that are doing it. My first reaction was thinking of just even Windows updates.
I've got those. It's set as a metered connection. I don't get updates until in the middle of the night in the free zone when I turn the metered connection off. Then I update both computers. But that is, it's set as metered, and so those updates do not come automatically.
Okay. There are a few utilities out there that can try to help you monitor, and I don't know if you have any apps. Do you have anything on your computer right now that can actually monitor what applications are using what bandwidth?
Well, there, yes and no. Windows itself has a built-in data usage app for what, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And I can look at that and I can see what, and the biggest user is either Chrome or Edge, depending on which browser I've been using lately. But whatever this is, it's before I open up any browser. Now, I looked again last night, and I read, I've gone into, I've used the Windows key, Windows plus R, and then you can do MS config, and then you get a little menu. And I looked again last night for some answers, and it suggested under services, I've already got a bunch of stuff turned off in there, but it said something about intelligent, I don't know what.
Nah.
To disable that. Do you know anything about that? You know what I'm talking about?
Off the top of my head, I'm not sure what it is. It could be many things.
Okay.
I was, I think the first thing I was thinking of was Logitech hardware. Because I think they have some pieces of software that kind of fit with that. But without seeing more, it's difficult to know. I was trying to find other applications as well that would help you monitor, even before you log in, what software is using what bandwidth. And there's a lot of software pieces out there. But without actually digging in a little bit deeper, I wasn't able to find exactly which one is going to kind of work for your situation.
Are you familiar with Google Auto Updates?
Yes.
And does that, even if you're not, if you don't have a browser open, is that possible to be updating in the background before you, if you have it? I don't know.
Nope. And actually, the case is yes. So for Google Auto Updates, normally Google Chrome and maybe some of the other apps, what you want to take a look at is something called Task Scheduler. You can find it in the control panel.
Right.
And Task Scheduler, you're going to see a lot of different things up there. One of them most likely is actually going to be Google, in this case, Google Chrome. So it will run regardless of whether a user is logged in or not. So it could be doing those downloaded updates depending on when those updates are found. You might also find that there are other software pieces that are starting up automatically before you log in that might be doing something similar.
Okay.
Google will do that. I've seen that in the past. I've also seen it with Adobe Flash and a few other applications. So that's one place you could look to at least see what might be starting up. And if you do have Chrome and you use Chrome, that could be one of those. Another option would be to see, I'd be curious what's, you know, kind of different between both of your computers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have software that's not installed on the other or vice versa? Because it might help you narrow down this difference may be mm-hmm. the actual thing that's causing me to download more data than I want to.
Yeah, there you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 800-642-1234. Give a call. Turn to John and Shawno next. Hi, John.
Oh, hi, guys. Say, how about them Packers turning?
Let's not talk about them. What can we do for you on the computer side?
Let's get to the computer side. Say, I am no expert here whatsoever. I'm running Windows 7 on a pretty old computer that had some good guys here in Shawno kind of rebuilt. It's an old workhorse. My question is about security systems. Some many months ago, you know, trying to get into something or other. Now I have AVG always coming up and a whole bunch of screens that I have to delete before, you know what I mean, just to get rid of them. My question is AVG associated with MacV or not? And I have my MacV security scan plus here, which was installed when I had my computer kind of rebuilt. Are they associated with each other? If not, what should I have? That AVG is so annoying that, I number one, I just want to get rid of it. What would you prefer for
a system, yeah.
And there are a lot of free antivirus software packages out there. AVG is one. At least from a quick search, it's a little bit different from McAfee. To my knowledge, they haven't acquired them. It's completely open source freeware. If you like McAfee and it works, I'd say keep McAfee, as long as it's licensed and functional.
How do you get rid of AVG?
So that's another thing I was thinking about. One place that I'd go to right away would be add and remove programs, or programs and features, depending on the version of Windows. Another thing that I'd look at, since you're getting a lot of these pop-ups, it does make me feel it's less of software that's really installed and running on your computer than it is more of, you know, malware or adware. I'd actually recommend downloading some of these different anti-malware programs. One that I've liked a lot that I know a lot of other people use is Super Anti-Spyware, which, when you think of the name, it actually almost feels like it's spyware, adware itself, but it's a real software package, Super Anti-Spyware. It will scan your computer, look for anything that really shouldn't be there or that you should be concerned about, and will try to help you remove it. My guess is this AVG thing that you're seeing pop up, normally you're not going to see these happen all the time. It could just be that it's kind of built into that software when it got installed, but it should hopefully help you remove any of that. But I would first check your add or remove programs to see if you can remove it from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and then I'm sorry if I could ask just one more thing. With McAfee, is that the guy that is like being indicted or went to prison or something? Anyway, but that's kind of besides the point.
I don't know.
There were some interesting legal conversations. Yes, with McAfee.
Okay. All right, there you go. Something to think about, John. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. And again, it's Super Anti-Spyware.
Yeah, Super Anti-Spyware. There are a lot of others out there, SpyBot Search and Destroy. But Super Anti-Spyware seems to be very well updated, so you're going to get kind of those latest updates. It seems to run pretty quickly, and it works. And there's a lot out there, but I do like that one quite a bit.
There you go, John. Thanks for calling. Gene in Sun Prairie, your turn. Hi, Gene.
Hello. I have inherited my daughter's old 2008 MacBook running Snow Leopard, and so I can't update Safari, so I'm concerned about security issues. Is there any way around that?
There are a couple things you can do. One would be, if you're not able to get, you know, one of the later versions of macOS that is supported, for the last few, they've been free that you can download from the App Store. If you're not able to do that because it's possible the hardware simply won't support it,
right,
I would recommend actually downloading a third-party browser. So let's say Firefox or Google Chrome. As long as those are supported on that version of the operating system, you'd at least have some enhanced protection. However, you're still in that situation of having a computer that's not fully up to date. You're not going to be able to update macOS or any other built-in applications. So it can give you a little bit of extra protection when you're browsing the web, but it's also possible that even Google and Mozilla aren't releasing updated browsers for that version of macOS. So it's a possibility that could be something that could help you in the short term. Unfortunately, the only other thing you can really do in that case, if the hardware doesn't support a different version of macOS from the last few, the only other option is to actually replace the hardware.
Yeah. There you go. So, issues there. A few issues there.
Yeah, and it's difficult because, at least if you have a newer Mac and the hardware supports it. You can really keep it running for quite some time as long as you can run the latest versions of Mac OS. But if you're not in that latest 3, you just don't get any updates. And it's nice because you still have third-party software companies out there that develop software. They might still even still give you updates for those older workstations that have older operating systems just to keep you up and running. But if they decide that they don't want to release, they want to keep on the support cycle of Apple or Microsoft, then it kind of phases that out.
You're
it's
out
a
luck.
Lot more difficult.
Gene, thanks again. Diane in Hibbing, Minnesota, your turn. Hi, thank you for calling, Diane.
Yeah, thanks. I'm calling because I'm wanting to replace my desktop. It's about an 8-year-old Dell, and I think I run out of Microsoft 7.
Yeah,
that's the processor. But I want to get something, and I understand that a Chromebook might be possible, a much cheaper option to replace that, and then do my work all either from the cloud or from online. It just seems kind of far out to me, but I want to get your advice on what you're thinking about that.
Yeah, and depending on the usage, getting a Chromebook is really inexpensive and really functional.
Yeah.
I know a few people who have been using them, and they like them quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For what I do, generally, it's nice having a lot of internal storage where I can definitely take a lot of my stuff on the go. And it doesn't mean you can't do that with a Chromebook as well. But if you do a lot of basic web browsing, checking email, a Chromebook works great. And even the built-in applications that you can just get from the Google Store, you have a lot of options. So I'd say it's functional. If you were to say, you know, I do video editing for a living and I'd like to switch to a Chromebook, I probably wouldn't recommend it. But for average day-to-day use, I think it's a great option.
Yeah, my daughter has one. Well, they use them in her school, as a matter of fact.
I know they use them in schools. And what about another thing I do is download my pictures and do some little bit of editing, not very much, but I do some editing. Is that possible to do that with a Chromebook?
And yes, that is possible.
Yeah.
And you can, you can save the pictures, whether it's on the laptop. It depends on the model, of course, which one you get. But you can also store it on Google Drive. So if you decide to use all the integrated applications that Google has with the Chromebook, you get a lot more options. But it means that, you know, even if you hopped onto a different Chromebook, you kind of get the same experience. So you have all of your photos easily accessible, and you can also have it locally so you can work offline.
Do you still need to have protection for the computer with a Chromebook, or is that not necessary? I mean, do I need to have some kind of security system?
I would recommend with any computer that you have some kind of security software.
Okay.
The main reason being, you know, we look at Dells or, you know, PCs versus Macs versus Linux versus Google devices. All of these are made by people, and people may not do everything perfectly, meaning that there could be security vulnerabilities or people out there trying to take advantage of those vulnerabilities. I definitely recommend some kind of software that can at least check your system to make sure that you don't have viruses or no one's doing anything nefarious.
Okay, and then one other thing is right now I have an iPad and I have my old Dell, and I take a lot of classes on and off, and you can get those just at the mall. What do I do with a Chromebook? Do they have classes that you can take on how to use the machine and use the software that's available?
They do have some documentation online. I haven't actually looked specifically to... they probably do have... I don't know if they have classes actually kind of around the area. Normally, I would actually check with technical schools or continuing education courses in your area because they might have something specifically for Google Chromebooks or other devices. Outside of that, you might even be able to find enough information just directly from Google. Some of them do really great job at doing documentation. And also, in your case, you know, I have this computer and I want to switch to a Chromebook. How can I? They're usually pretty good about saying, here's how, and we want to make sure you use it. So you could probably find a lot of information directly from Google.
I know just because they're so often used in schools, there's a lot of just online tutorial information.
Yeah. Well, that's great. You helped me make up my mind. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for calling. Appreciate your call. And those run, I can't remember what, they're inexpensive, the Chromebooks.
Yeah, they do have a range of maybe $100 or $200 to, you know, far more than that.
Yeah,
it really
sure.
depends what you're looking for. But for just casual browsing and everything else, it works great. Kind of like, which was one of the big items, even on shopping lists, is the new Kindle Fire. And it's a small little tablet. It still uses the Google Store, and you can do a lot of the same things. So when you have these devices that you can use a lot more interchangeably, it opens up new avenues for working with documents and listening to music.
Ted in Hillsboro, thanks for calling. Hello.
Hi, nice, thanks for taking my call. Hello?
Yes, what can we do for you? Oh.
Okay, I got, I bought a Surface, i3 Surface, and I had it for over the year, so it was over the warranty period, and I was having problems with it, so I purchased an i4, and when I pulled the i4 out of the box, I you know, it didn't even cross my mind, but I set it up for, I had the same password, login password, same username, you know, and password on that device. So I had two devices with the same login, basically, information. Well, then my i3, shortly after that, like within about a week, my i3 quit running, and I called Microsoft on it and explained to them what happened. And they told me, that I needed to do a complete restore of the system. And I had already done system restores to try to get it back working right, but it didn't work. But anyhow, so I did the big one where you wipe everything out, you start from scratch. And so I did that, and then it knocked me off of the Internet. So I have no way to get onto the Internet on that i3. And I called Microsoft back, and they said that I needed to send it or take it into a Microsoft Service Center to have that fixed. And I'm just wondering if there's something
you could do. Yeah, is there?
And for so right now, when you even try to get into your device, do you know if you're using a Microsoft user account or something else?
It's my account.
Okay.
And so I think what happened was, I don't think that you can have two Surface devices with the same, username and password.
You know, we'll just take a quick break while Jesse thinks about that. Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll be right back with some answers. Talking computer issues today with Jesse LeGrew from the UW-Madison Division of Information Technology. Ted from Hillsboro on the line with a question about password problems. And Jesse, anything that you can help us with on his password problems?
Yeah, the only thing that, I can normally recommend in this case, if it is, whether it's a Microsoft account, which is kind of the online cloud version, you can kind of log in just like an Apple ID with an iPhone or a Mac. You can reset your password from Microsoft. However, it seems like it does work on the other device. They do recommend really resetting the device from scratch. Unfortunately, that does delete all the data on your device. However, if you can't do recovery in any other way, you might need to actually send it into Microsoft. Otherwise, you might be able to find an actual local retailer or service center that you can even just take it into, just to get a brief look at it. Some companies might be able to just at least take a look and give you some quick advice, and even sometimes they might be able to fix it.
Yeah.
But if the reset didn't work and a reinstallation of Windows does not work, and they have a system recovery feature, if any of those don't work, I really would probably send it into Microsoft or look for a local retailer or service center that could take a look at it.
Okay, there we go. And thanks again, Ted, for that question. Chris in Darlington, it's your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Okay, my question is my Word quit working, and I don't have Internet at home. I use the Wi-Fi at our community library, and my Word will work when I'm online, but it won't work at home. And I like to use it for writing, and I can't open any of my, things that I've written, any of my documents. I can't open them. It will just say that it needs to be online. So what can I do?
For, do you know what version of Word or Office that you have on your computer?
6.
Okay.
Windows 6.
Okay.
And I'm trying to take a look. So, there are a few different versions of Office out there. One of the most recent thing that people have been going to is something called, Microsoft Office 365. It's basically an online version of Office that does require internet connectivity. The one thing I take a look at is when you are online, many times it'll have a download option. And it really does depend if this is Office 365 or not. Normally, the only thing I would think of if it can't work when you're not connected to the internet is for activation reasons. However, I think you have a completely different thing going on here. It's basically using an online version of Word through your web browser. Another thing that you could try is to actually look, have you looked in the start menu in a Microsoft Office folder and tried to start the application in a different way?
Yes. I've tried that, and I updated my Windows, the updates, and then I installed anti-malware. And what happens is I go to the library and I use my USB to copy stuff so then I can read it at home.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wouldn't. I was wondering if I could have brought something home that made it stop working.
And it's a possibility, but I would I tend to doubt it. Most likely, if you do have something that's going to infect or do something bad to your computer, it's not going to be as specific as making Word not function. So I'm guessing that's not the case. But the fact that, and so you're getting a message that you just need to be online in order for it to work, or do you have the exact phrase that it used?
Oh, gosh. It sounded like, it might have been that, gosh, sorry, I can't remember what it said. It didn't say online. It sounded like I wasn't registered or something, but the thing is it was working all along, and all of a sudden it stopped working.
Hmm.
Okay. If it does say not registered, that actually does sound like an activation issue. So the actual, whatever error message you do get, I would recommend writing it down word for word,
okay,
just to make sure you have the exact error message. If it is an Office activation issue, basically meaning it kind of thinks it's illegal software, it just isn't registered with Microsoft. If you don't have internet connectivity, you might not be able to license it. And you actually have to call into Microsoft to do that. And that could be the fix, but I would actually write down the exact error message. In this case, what I would actually do is I'd normally Google the message, find out what the actual issue is. If it is software registration, you might be able to easily call Microsoft and actually get it registered. There's usually links in the bottom that state, click here to activate, and you can do it over the phone, which means you don't need the internet. I'd recommend taking a look there. Otherwise, if you do have your old installation disk or download for Office, you might just want to uninstall Office and reinstall it.
Oh. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. Yeah, why not?
Okay, I'll try that next.
All right,
thanks, Chris. Thanks for calling. Tom in Watertown, thank you for calling. How can we help?
Hi, I'm just curious about the problems with Chrome and Flash. I am unable to play numerous different video type features on Chrome, and I understand there's some problem between Chrome and Flash. Could you just explain the problem and if you have a fix?
Yeah, so basically Google is trying to move forward with something they call HTML5. It's just kind of a new World Wide Web that allows for more interactivity, including videos and other streaming. Basically, they're trying to move away from using Adobe Flash, one due to security issues, but also to embrace this new technology that's coming out that should give a lot of people a better experience without needing all of these other plugins or software from third parties. However, they were going to kind of make that the default in, I think it was in December of this year. So I would think that no changes have come up yet. I use Chrome on my Mac and Chrome on my PC at home, and I am able to use Flash, but it could be an actual setting for your Chrome browser as well. Did you just start having the issue?
Been going on for about 2 or 3 weeks.
Okay.
So I switch over to Internet Explorer or Firefox, and sometimes it doesn't work on Firefox either.
What I'd probably recommend... Oh, sorry.
Machine problem.
Sorry?
I don't think it's a machine problem.
Okay.
One thing I'd recommend is actually downloading the latest version of Flash and reinstalling it directly from Adobe's website. And they will have downloads for Windows, and they have a kind of a variety of plugins. Chrome did go to a completely different kind of technology that was previously used by Firefox. Firefox called it NPAPI. Makes no sense to anyone, but you know, it's just a different series of letters. And Chrome has something else right now as well. You can download that directly from Adobe's site. What you might even want to do is uninstall any previous versions of the Flash plugin you have on your system. Download those latest ones. Unfortunately, that means you have to download three of them. Reinstall them and then give it a try.
And there we go. Thanks for calling. Our guest today, Jesse LeGrew from UW Do It. He'll be with us right till 12:30. Stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at your computer today with Jesse LeGrew, Jesse's technical team lead with the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology. So great to have him back. He's with us until 12:30 today, and I'll just mention now he's back on January 2nd in the new year. So look forward to that as well. Here are the ways you can contact us. You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Jesse, our next call comes from Rob in Wauwatosa. Rob, thank you for calling.
Yes, good afternoon now. You had a previous caller that was asking about intelligence something. I'm pretty sure what she's referring to is background intelligent transfer and services. And turning that off is a very bad idea, because if you turn that off, Windows Backup will cease functioning.
Oh, okay. If that's what she was talking about, Jesse, are you familiar with that?
Yeah, and it's called BITS, basically, B-I-T-S. It's used by a variety of services, and it's dependent for Windows updates and a lot of other items. You definitely want to keep that running to make sure that things are running smoothly, but turning off those other services that might rely on it to save bandwidth, or to, I guess, strategically place when those downloads occur is a good idea. But yeah, you definitely don't want to disable that service.
Yeah. Now,
there is a site, it's called blackviper.com. He's got a pretty detailed synopsis of various Windows operating systems and what you can turn off in services in MSConfig, and what the effects of them are on various programs.
So it's Black Viper, blackviper.com.
Yes.
All right.
Right.
Rob, thank you. Appreciate the call very much. And Ron in La Crosse, it's your turn. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, I got a question. Has your guest ever heard about an operating system called Ubuntu or Ubuntu? U-B-U-N-T-H-I, or begins with an I. I just wonder. And I also have a question. What do you think of Windows Defender as a firewall over, say, Norton Security?
So first on the first question, I think it's Ubuntu, which is a Linux operating system. I've actually used it. I don't use it on a day-to-day basis, but even 5 to 10 years ago, it was a very useful Linux operating system, free. You can install on a variety of hardware, and it was pretty easy to use. Kind of that was 5 to 10 years ago. So even using it now, I'm sure it's improved even quite a bit more. But Ubuntu is just a Linux operating system. You can use it for, you know, really everything, and you have the advantage of a lot of open source software that's easy to install. For example, OpenOffice, which does work with a lot of other Microsoft documents as well. So Ubuntu is a great operating system, free. I'd recommend it for anyone to try. And I believe they also have something called a live CD or live DVD, which allows you to run the operating system without actually installing it, meaning that you're not going to delete any of the files in your computer, and you can try it out.
Oh, okay. And then the second question?
And for the second question, Windows Defender, it does work. If you do have a different software application that does antivirus or other features, I definitely recommend disabling Windows Defender in that case, but it does work. I haven't used it a whole lot myself. I generally do use third-party products, but Windows Defender has been improved over the last several years and is something very easy to use and comes built in.
Yep, there we go. Thanks, Ron. Cheryl in Wauwatosa, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about, and I don't know if this is in your line of expertise or not, your guess, but my husband has told me that using Pinterest is really an open door for lots of viruses and problems. I like to go on Pinterest from lots of different devices, my home computer, my tablet, my phone. Do you know if this is true? I mean, is that something that I need to be worrying about?
It's... And not to try to scare, you know, I guess you or anyone else out there too much, I'd kind of be scared about a little bit of everything. So anything you kind of go out to the browse on the web has some kind of potential to do something bad to your computer, whether it's something they've actually posted within an image. A lot of it generally within Pinterest is more social media issues and social engineering than it is actual viruses. So be careful about, you know, what you're looking at and kind of who you might, you know, be pinning or repinning from. Overall, I would say it's generally not an issue. I'd just make sure you'd have antivirus or something else. But on anything you click on online, I would just, you know, take a double look once, look twice, just verify some of the information where it's coming from. But a lot of issues are out there, but most of it is really not virus related. It's generally other hacking and social engineering. So I'd be as scared of Pinterest as I would be of Facebook or anything else.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because you get a ton of pop-ups. I mean, you get a ton of pop-ups anywhere, but Pinterest especially. There's just tons and tons, and then sometimes it's really hard to get out of it. Like, even though it has the little X to click out, it doesn't want to let you, and then if you touch it, it takes you to a different site. So, I mean, I could see why there would be problems with it, but I love that site, so I want to keep using it for, you know, I do a lot of cooking and baking, so I use it for that.
Okay.
But I'll just be extra careful, I guess.
Yeah, and I would just double check on the content you're looking at. I look at it for woodworking as well, but use a program, so Super Anti-Spyware, looking for software that might create pop-ups. I'd run that, just make sure things are clean.
Okay.
It's as safe as you want it to be, but, you know, depending on what you click on, you can never know about the person on the other end of that pin.
Yeah.
And what they might have put up there and how that might change, you know, how your browser reacts.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Nancy emailed us to ask how she can find reliable computer services. Her last two online ones were not reliable, not interested in geek organization.
And so in this case, I kind of look at, you know, the people around you. Try to get some of the information from neighbors, friends, and everything else in the area. So I'd look at those kind of user reviews. One thing that I've actually used, since I have a house now, there's a little app called Nextdoor. You can actually kind of be as a part of a community online, and people are like, hey, I have this at the side of the road if you want to pick it up. But people ask about input for a variety of things. Could be computer services, could be babysitting. But at least you can put it out there for other neighbors in your area so you can find that shop that might be close that you could go to. But I would actually look at other online ads, resources, and reviews to see if you can find a different repair shop that's going to work for you. You're going to get that feedback, and you need to hear really what other users think. That's really the only thing I can recommend.
What's the app name again?
The app name is Nextdoor.
Nextdoor, okay.
And that's one of many avenues, but the idea is you're going to have to get input from people in your area. There are a lot of shops out there. They're all a little bit different, but you need to get the user feedback. So any place where you can actually get user reviews and feedback is going to give you a better indication of what's available in your area.
Jeff in Kenosha has something for us. Hi, Jeff. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, thank you. Back in August, Windows pushed the Windows anniversary update on me. And I thought, oh, that's great. But it just totally messed up my computer. It would freeze up. Programs wouldn't operate. So I reverted back to the previous build. Everything worked fine again. But I figured I'd wait a while, see if they work out the bugs. In the meantime, I installed a new BIOS on my Hewlett-Packard laptop, and then I did try it again mid-October, and again, same problem. So I reverted back to the old build, but I hear that it's inevitable that we're going to get it, that they're going to push it on us at some day, and I want to know what to do about that.
And so if it is going to be pushed out and there's really not much you can do, there would seem there's not much you can do. However, there is something normally that they do have with any kind of Windows operating system or application that allows you to block certain updates. A lot of these might be due to organizations that really don't want it on their computers and they want to disable it. I would actually need to take a look and really deep dive into it to see if there is a way to completely disable that from coming out in the future.
Is there something on Windows 10 that you can get it to operate like the 7?
You can. However, if I'm understanding correctly, it's still going to install the Anniversary Edition. And kind of going from 7 or 10 to 7, they have the same feature that came with Windows 8 and 8.1. So you can use the previous version. It's still not going to happen with the Anniversary update. I just happened to find a kind of a thread on Reddit about how to disable it. There's a lot of info out there right now. I'd have to actually take a deeper dive. There might be, but I don't have the answer immediately.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. Thanks for calling. Reddit, you went to?
I went to Reddit. Reddit, you can get a lot of information up there. But they did have a thread on actually disabling the update. Many times, if Microsoft doesn't allow you to do it yourself, you can download a program and just disable it. You actually need to make a change to the registry, which, you know, if you've never done it before, can be a very scary and somewhat dangerous thing. But there normally are guides out there to do that. Right now, if it's a recommended update, you can kind of ignore it for now. If you are in Windows Update, you can see all the different updates. Sometimes when you do check for updates, it'll list all your updates, and you can tell it, never remind me about this update again. That may fix it. It may not. Mm-hmm. If they really do require it, they really do have that power, to make it happen. But there could be other possibilities by changing the registry, but I'd have to look further.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate the call. Jim in Wales, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I've got another Windows 10 question. When I took the anniversary update on my laptop, I ended up having to spend like 2 days on the phone with Microsoft. And the problem was that when the thing was trying to boot after it said it was done, it would basically sit with the spinning circle on the screen for hours at a time. I mean, if you leave it forever, it'll go on forever as long as the machine's plugged in the wall. Eventually, we got it fixed. You know, they did a couple of reversions and retry and reload it with saving your own files and that kind of thing. And it's been working pretty well. So, basically, Windows 10 is okay except for this problem. Now, what happens is every time they push an update, you know, I go through some series of events where I see that spinning circle for a while. You know, I shut it down, I start over, reboot. But it's managed through that pretty quickly. It doesn't take too much time. But now, the other week, I got another update, and, you know, there's no way to get the thing to boot again. I can get into safe mode. I've tried the reverting, you know, saving my files and reloading and the fixes when it comes up, but it's basically stuck with that spinning circle again. And, you know, I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah, and unfortunately, the only thing I can think of, especially considering a lot of the changes and rolling back, the only thing I could really recommend is looking at rolling back potentially to a point in time before that issue really started happening again. I don't know whether, you know, another update in the future kind of caused that issue, whether it was the anniversary update or even something completely unrelated. But I'd recommend doing the go to a different restore point. You can go to the recovery options when you boot up Windows, and you should be able to get to it within Windows if you're able to get in. I would try to restore back, use it at that point. I might also consider backing up all my data on the computer, because maybe just reinstalling Windows from factory defaults and reloading your other, you know, settings and data from backup could be another solution.
Right. I mean, I have my data files backed up. I mean, we've seen a similar problem on multiple computers in the house. You know, both really starting with the Windows anniversary update.
Yeah.
The one I'm running on is the one that really gets hit the hardest. You know, so yeah. I don't know. They're doing something wrong.
Yeah. And if so, one thing I just found as well, if it is the anniversary update and it's causing issues, one way that people have actually been able to disable it from downloading so you don't have those changes that might cause issues is to actually turn on what they call a metered connection for your computer. If you do have a metered connection, it will actually disable downloading any of the updates because it wants to save your bandwidth. I always recommend getting updates because especially security and vulnerability updates, you want to make sure you have the most safe computer. But it could be something just to, you know, minimize any potential options or even tell the computer that you need to approve every software installation update. The recommended settings will automatically install every so often. To kind of turn it on to full manual will give you a little bit more control. But otherwise, yeah, the reinstall, it's kind of the only other thing I could recommend. One other thing to consider is that maybe it's not even a software issue, but a hardware issue. So also, if you do have other diagnostic options for your computer, so for example, Dell's have a built-in diagnostic. They do basic hardware checks. They probably have those for other pieces of hardware as well. Just rule out that it's not hardware, because then you could be, you know, looking at the software and then you find out that it's actually a hard drive or memory or something else. So I would quickly check on that. A lot of them, vendors will have that on their websites.
All right. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Lynn in Barnum, Minnesota, you're next. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking my call. I've been looking at tablets and I'm trying to figure out what kind of tablet to buy me and my stepdaughter. She writes a lot of poems, listens to music, reads a little, and takes a lot of pictures. Me, I read a lot, take some pictures, and I kind of got a book in my head that I would like to start writing, so okay. Something that could hold that.
Okay.
And I think in this case, there are really a lot of options out
yeah.
there. You can go with, even we kind of just mentioned it before, they have the Amazon tablets. So, for example, the HD Fire, there's a new version that just came out. Pretty inexpensive, but will have a lot of the things you'd need, at least to do some of those, at a very low cost. But you can go all the way up to something that has a fully fledged operating system, full, you know, version of Windows, that you can actually use Word, Excel, and pretty much do anything you would like you would from a normal PC. So part of it's going to really depend on the ease of working with it. Because in this case, you could even use an iPad. I mean, you really have all the options open there for you. So I would kind of look at a store and see what's the most comfortable. If you do use an iPhone or a lot of other iDevices, maybe an iPad actually is a good option.
Yeah.
But for cost, you know, a lot of the Android tablets are very inexpensive. Even the Windows-based tablets from Dell or other manufacturers are not terribly expensive in comparison to a full laptop. So it really depends. I think I would probably go myself with an Android tablet, but I'm used to Android. I have an Android device as my phone. I've used a lot of the apps before. It can integrate with Google, meaning that you can have your, if you're going to be writing a book, you kind of have it wherever you're going to be. So you could even work at a different computer somewhere else and work on it. You have that capability with other devices as well, but it's probably one I'd go to, especially for cost.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Don in Rhinelander, thanks for calling.
Yeah, thank you. So my question is, I've been using Outlook Mail for quite some time, and it has a feature on it called Sweep. So if you get some junk mail, you're supposed to be able to hit Sweep and then to say ignore any future mails from that sender. And I keep getting the same junk mails over and over again. It seems like that feature has not worked.
And it kind of depends on, I guess, the spam that you're getting. A lot of the spammers are getting very, very good about sending spam these days, and they're actually going to change that sender address very slightly every single time they send spam, meaning that something like the sweep feature will just, you know, it will hit that first email. They'll add a number 2 to the end.
Sure.
And it's no longer going to see that anymore.
How do you get around that?
The only other thing that I can think of to get around that is to create other custom rules. So what the sweep does is allows you to create your own rules and filter it to folders like junk mail. You could consider turning on something like junk mail. It might allow you to remove some of your emails and put it into a place where you don't see it. For your email, do you know your provider for email?
It's Microsoft. It's the Outlook, their Outlook or live.com mail.
Okay. One other thing you might want to consider then is, I know for, we use Office 365, we have something called Clutter. You might consider turning that on. I believe it should be a feature since it is part of the Microsoft suite. And Clutter will try to actually learn based upon what you do. So if you're finding spam and hitting delete or moving it to Clutter, it will learn over time and start being more intelligent about moving the items you have into what they call a clutter folder or my clutter folder. And that gives you a lot more flexibility than the sweep, especially if it's only looking at the sender of the email. So I would look into that clutter feature. And if that's not there, they also have their own junk mail feature, but those are probably going to give you a lot better results.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure of that. Although there can be some problems with clutter once in a while too. If something getting put in clutter that you really wanted.
Yeah, the false positives are always a danger, which is why it's such a delicate balance between filtering out things you want as junk mail, but then potentially filtering out things that aren't junk mail, and they end up going there. And there are other ways you can try to mitigate that with rules that take over. Mm-hmm. If junk mail, if you know you have some safe senders, there are other ways to train it.
Jesse, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to your next visit on January 2nd. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jesse LeGrew is a technical team lead within the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Division of Information Technology, or DOIT. Great to have him with us back on January 2nd. Tomorrow we'll be talking to the author of a new book on the power of giving. And the University of Wisconsin Chancellor Rebecca Blank will be with us to talk about what's going on at the UW. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.